The communal spirit is essentially conservative. All that it acquires, whether it be an abuse or an advantage, it holds with equal tenacity. In order to regenerate the communes, it was necessary to deprive them of a part of their rights until their training should be completed. Then only would have been granted to them a greater independence without danger to the general welfare. The prosperity of the communes was the object of the most anxious solicitude of the emperor. To work, said he, for the prosperity of 36,000 communes is to work for the prosperity of 30 million of the population. By simplifying the question and by diminishing the difficulty pertaining to great numbers, whose difference is indicated by the proportion between 36,000 and 30 million. With this view, the emperor divided the commune into three classes: communes which were in debt, communes whose accounts are square, and communes having disposable resources. By certain ways and means, which he explained to the Minister of the Interior, 5 years would have sufficed to clear away the indebted communes. There would have remained only two classes, viz., those whose accounts were square and those having disposable resources. And at the end of 10 years, every commune in France would have been in possession of disposable resources. The alienation of the property of the communes, considered in reference to the progress of agriculture, said the emperor, is a most important question of political economy, which can be agitated. The discussion of it was cut short by the imperious necessities of war. In 1813, the lands, houses, and factories belonging to the communes were sold. They retained the woods, pastures, turf fields, and other property which the inhabitants enjoyed in common or from which they derived no revenue, as well as the buildings appropriated to the public service and the places which contributed to the public health or pleasure. The property which was to be sold was conveyed to the sinking fund. The communes received in 5% stock and income equal to the next revenue derived from the property conveyed. It is very clearly seen from what proceeds that the intentions of the emperor were all directed towards the amelioration of the material well-being of the country. It is also seen that when the disasters of war compelled him to have recourse to expedients, the resources which he knew how to develop were not destructive to the interests of the country, and that they were different from the means employed by other governments in similar circumstances. He did not resort either to paper money, or to forced loans, or to excessive borrowing, or to the depreciation of the value of coin, as was done even by Frederick the Great. The emperor had made precise discriminations among the resources of his state. Once, said he, only one kind of property was recognized, property in land. There came another, that of industry, which is now engaged in a contest with the first. It is the great contest of the field against the counting room, of the battlements against the trades. Then came a third kind derived from the enormous taxes levied upon the people, and which, distributed by the neutral and impartial hands of government, affords protection against the monopoly of others, serves as their medium of communication, and prevents their proceeding to acts of violence. He made the following classification: agriculture, the foundation of the empire; manufactures, representing the comfort, the happiness of the population; foreign commerce, representing superabundance; and the good employment of agriculture and manufactures. Foreign commerce, very much inferior to the two other branches in its results, was for this reason constantly subordinated to them in the mind of Napoleon. Foreign commerce is made for the two other branches. They are not made for it. The interests of these three essential bases are divergent, often opposite. I have always treated them with reference to their natural rank. Agriculture did not cease at any time to make great advances under the empire. Agriculture, like all other arts, said Napoleon, perfects itself by means of comparison and example. He directed the prefects to make known to him agriculture proprietors who distinguished themselves, whether by a better understanding or more rational culture, or by more careful training of farm animals and improvement of breeds. In such departments as were behindhand in the arts of cultivation, the good proprietors were indeed to send their children to study and learn the methods employed in the departments where agriculture was in a flourishing state. Praise and distinction were awarded to those who excelled. The rural code projected in 1802 was submitted in 1808 to commissions of consultation formed in each branch of the Court of Appeal and composed of the most distinguished judges, administrators, and agriculturalists. This code could not be completed under the empire.